Okay, members, I think we better get started. The original order of the agenda, we're just going to take Representative Greiling first. She is here and ready to go. I will call the meeting of the Early Childhood Finance and Policy to order. And this is House File 3209. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Some of you who are here may remember the bill that Representative Murphy had last year dealing with...
Would you like to move your bill?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, sure. I'm on the committee. I would move House File 3209 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Murphy had a bill last year that dealt with the problem of when some legitimate mistake happens, but it falls into the definition of maltreatment, and then even if parents come forward as they testified last year and want some mitigation to that very severe statute, it can't be done. And that bill did not pass. This is a totally new bill. And I have with me Cisa Keller from the Child Care Association, the president?
Government Relations Chair,
mm-hmm. Who will give us a recap again of why we need the bill. And what it does basically is ask that child care centers, or require them actually, to have a risk reduction plan, define a non-maltreatment mistake, and then there's more opportunities for humaneness in very well-qualified teachers being able to continue. So, Madam Chair, with that, I would turn it over to Ms. Keller.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, representatives, my name is Cisa Keller. I'm the Director of Government and Community Relations for New Horizon Academy and the new Government Relations Chair for the Minnesota Child Care Association. The Minnesota Child Care Association is a group of 250 child care providers throughout Minnesota. House File 3209 is aimed at keeping high qualified teachers in our centers, all while ensuring that licensed child care centers maintain the safest possible environment for children and their families. As many of you will remember, last year we brought Heather Qualley before this committee. She was an excellent preschool teacher, one of the best, the one that every parent wants to leave their child with. Unfortunately, an incident occurred in her classroom, an incident that many parents have had happen to them. A child had their fingers pinched in the door, and the parents took their child to the doctor as preventative measure. The child returned to the center the next day as if nothing had happened. Little did that family know, nor any of the other 19 families, that soon they would lose their beloved Miss Heather. Under the current maltreatment of minor statute, Heather Qualley was determined to have maltreated a child and lost her background study and was no longer eligible to work with young children for 7 years. These findings are as a result of a very strict set of rules and the statute used by the department aimed at ultimately keeping children safe. This new language introduces a process where centers assess the potential risks of their site and then create a risk reduction plan. This aspect of the bill is aimed at preventing potential accidents. In the very few instances where an accident does still occur, we are proposing a new determination can be made. This new determination is called a non-maltreatment mistake and is aimed at providing the Department of Human Services the ability to differentiate between an individual who has truly maltreated a child and a professional that has had an accident occur in their classroom. A non-maltreatment mistake would be made if the following conditions are met. At the time of the incident, the individual was performing the duties identified in the center's program plan. The individual had not had a maltreatment determination for a similar incident in the previous 7 years. The individual had not had a non-maltreatment mistake determination for a similar incident for the previous 4 years. And if injuries had occurred and required medical treatment, it can only be for remedies that could be attained over the counter, whether ordered by the medical professional or not. And except for the period when the incident occurred, the individual and the center were in full compliance of all licensing requirements. We are all well aware that the foundation of any quality early childhood experience in child care centers is the stable, nurturing relationship between the teacher and the child. This change in statute is aimed at keeping highly qualified teachers in the classrooms while still keeping the safety of the children as a top priority. You have in your packets letters from the families that were affected by the maltreatment determination of Heather Qualley. They are examples of how parents recognize that accidents happen, but are equally concerned that their children continue to have relationships with these highly qualified teachers. I would like to point out that the most vocal of these parents were the parents of the child who had actually had the injury. Thank you for your time, and I'm available for any questions.
Members, questions? Well, you know, I just have a question in terms of, I always, when we have a bill and we see a whole bunch of underlined language, and there's a lot of it, I know that you worked hard on this and have been working on this, it's your second year back, as well as you, I think you had said this, but you have agreement among the child care centers that this is a good piece of legislation, and...
We really do, and we really feel that both measures, you know, both the prevention, you know, looking at the risk assessment and the risk reduction plan, looking at trying to prevent as many incidents as possible, but then having this you know, isolated incident where if something does still happen and it truly is an accident, we do have this non-maltreatment determination, and we really think that that's a huge step forward, so.
Okay. Thanks. Well, members, take a vote. Representative Greiling, any closing comments, and if you want to renew your motion.
Madam Chair and members, I think the lack of controversy now shows the good work that Representative Murphy and others did last year. We all thought she had a common sense bill, but this now makes it workable, and I appreciate members' support.
Thank you. Do you want to renew your motion?
And I renew my motion that House File 3209 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you very
much.
Thank you.
Members, I'd like to have the minutes approved.
I'll move them.
Okay. Representative Kulik Jackson moves to have the minutes approved for March 4th. Is there any discussion? Okay. Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The motion prevails and the minutes for March 4th are approved. Welcome to the committee, Representative Hayden. I know you have...
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. There's a lot going on here today, and I am sorry that I was in the hallway and was upstairs when we started. Madam Chair, members, I guess I can't move it. You have to.
Representative Hayden, I don't know if you heard that there's a little delay, I guess we call it, in the revisor's office and members. So we have this happening with two bills today, your bill and Representative Abler's bill. So we'd like to go through members' hearing, any questions, but we'll have to come back and do the official motions to pass it on Thursday. So at this point, it's an informational hearing, but so members, please, if you have questions, this is the point to ask them. So welcome to the committee, and
you
want to proceed
Chair.
With your testimony.
And members, this is somewhat of a department, Children and Families Technical Bill, and I think it is Section 2 that your committee has control over. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to the department to just explain Section 2, and we'll be available for questions.
Welcome to the committee. If you would like to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Deb Swenson-Klatt. I'm with Child Development Services at the Department of Human Services. And Article 2 of House File 3088 does relate to provisions in the child care portion of state statute, and the changes proposed pertain primarily to the Child Care Services Grants Program, which is a program that's been in place since 1989 to provide direct grants to child care providers to improve the quality of child care and support startup and facility improvements. And the administration of this program occurs through the Child Care Resource and Referral System at the local level and is guided by state statute. The Child Care Resource and Referral System, as you well know, also provides training and technical assistance to providers and referrals to parents who seek child care. And the CCRNR system operates in the state according to current statute in the governor's economic development regions. So there are 18 regional offices and a tribal office and then a statewide network office. In 2003, the Child Care Resource and Referral System reconfigured itself somewhat or reconfigured the delivery of some of its functions by identifying six of those regional offices as district offices as well, and did that toward the goal of more efficiently delivering services like the Child Care Services Grants Program across multiple regions. So there are two primary purposes proposed to change 119B that are contained in Article 2. And first is really a cleanup of some of the language that hasn't been touched since it was originally implemented. So it involves updating definitions, improving readability, reflecting current practice on the part of the CCRNR system, and providing clearer descriptions of program activities. And then a second purpose is to really streamline the administration of the Child Care Services Grants Program by changing the grant review committees from this regional level to a district level in order to more efficiently and more cost-effectively carry out that work. So in Section 1 of of Article 2, you'll see that there, Section 1 and Section 2, you'll see that there are definitions added for child care services grants. That definition hasn't existed previously, and a definition for a district in addition to the definition of region that's already in the statute.
Oh, what page is that on? Okay, thank you. Okay. 13?
Yes. Okay.
Thank you, Representative Ward.
And then in Section 3, there is the deletion of some obsolete language regarding a CCRNR function that in actuality has never been carried out. That RNR function was to administer and provide loans for child development education and training. And instead, the system has evolved over the years to provide the teach scholarships, not a loan program. So that, again, that loan function never was, has never evolved in the RNR system. In Section 4, there are a number of changes. Many of them simply reorder the language of the child care services grants to make it clearer. But it does include also language that in line 14.25 clarifies that these child care services grants, these grants that are primarily used to provide support to individual providers, should not also be available to child care resource and referral agencies themselves. We're proposing that language be deleted. And then you'll see that throughout this section, there is language that renames some of the grants that currently go to child care providers and are called in statute the technical assistance grants for family child care providers. We're proposing that those grants for family child care providers be named child care services grants, the same name as is used for grants to child care centers. The program, in essence, now operates in the same way for both family child care providers and child care centers, and this language would reflect that in statute. Another deletion that's made is on line 16.8, and this would delete a purpose of the Child Care Services Grants Program for interim financing, which is rarely requested on the part of child care providers in the state, and for practical purposes, we believe, is covered on line 16.1, where it allows for use of the grant funds for the creation of new licensed child care facilities and expanding existing facilities. The final part of section 4 to draw your attention to is in subdivision 3, beginning on line 15.8. And here's language proposed that would change the review committees for these grants at the local level, from the regional level to the district level. We think that this change will obviously reduce the number of advisory committees that need to be staffed by the CCRNRs. It reduces costs, simplifies program administration, and increases program efficiencies. So with that, I think I've highlighted the main sections or the main purposes of our proposed changes, then would be happy to take questions.
You know, I have a question, and then Representative Ward. I guess I'm trying to, your switch in language from, you know, the district and regional. The districts are the same districts the CCNR are in our districts, right?
Correct.
And what did regional?
In current statute, the CCRNR system is defined as being carried out through the governor's economic development regions. So there are 19 regional offices across the state that have existed since the start of the CCRNR system. But as I mentioned, in 2003, we essentially worked with the CCRNR system to identify regional offices that would act across regions, and shifted some functions that we felt could, with the RNR system, could be more effectively administered in a wider geographic area. So, for instance, a district office now might work with the regions in their service area to administer these grants, the child care services grants, but they also are a single point of implementation for referral services for CCRNR and for provision of training. They work with their regional offices and support those functions at the regional level. So it's really a kind of a tiered approach to administering more effectively and efficiently those CCRNR services.
Thank you. I mean, at some point it would be nice to have a map so we could understand this. I understand the six districts, but then when you're overlaying regions, it's a little hard for me to grasp exactly what's happening, you know. And I often refer more to the districts, you know, if we ever move to sort of a hub concept that Representative Peterson talks about, or her grant on having regional areas doing the distribution of child care or different monies. If we could understand the current system, it would be helpful.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we do have a map online on the CCRNR website, so I'd be happy to send you the link to that map.
That would be great. Thank you. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and that's what my question evolves around as well, is the term district and which six districts are implied here, which tribal program. I mean, I think a map would help all of us. I think that I want to look at I represent Region 5 economic district. Can you kind of give us some kind of just a quick breakdown of those six areas? I mean, is that possible or not?
Representative Ward, members, Madam Chair, I do have one copy of the map with me. Region 5 is in the Northeast District, and I'd be happy to share this and just pass it around so that you could see how we've divided up the regions in the state into these districts.
Representative Ward?
Okay, just I want to make sure, are all areas of the state going to be touched?
Representative Ward, Madam Chair, yes.
Okay, thank you.
And that's what I think it is confusing for us. You know, we're, as legislators, all politics is local, so we really want to know how it affects our area, is one, and then around the state, I think I'm always concerned about just fairness. And so if we have to be able to understand that the funding is being fairly distributed amongst these regions or districts and how that all works. And I know it's all through a formula and everything else, but I think we're simpler is better for us. So these changes obviously will work better for you, though.
And Madam Chair,
it actually is simpler, I think, right?
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
Members, any other questions? Representative Ward?
Could you pass that around for us, please? Thank you.
Okay. Just one other quick question, Ms. Swenson-Klatt. Is the CCDF proposal, is that based on the districts?
Madam Chair, the building quality bill.
The CCDF plan,
The CCDF plan as a whole. The CCDF plan really, I think, is applicable to both regions and districts. I think that the distinction here between the districts and the regions is simply that there are some CCRNR functions that are delivered across the state through coordination at the district office. There are other CCRNR functions that are also delivered across the whole state through those 19 regional offices. So the CCDF plan activities that are described for the CCRNR system are delivered in one or the other of those offices, again, across the whole state. And I should just mention that this proposed language does not change funding formulas. Same funding allocations would be delivered in the same ways as has been previously.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, we will, as I mentioned, members, if you did not hear this, that we didn't get the paperwork on the bill from the advisor, so we are not officially going to move it out of committee today, but when we do have it on Thursday, and you won't be required to come back, Representative Hayden, so hopefully this all goes smoothly, is we will have an amendment to the bill. Representative Kulik-Jackson, do you want to talk about that?
Yes, and in fact, does everyone have a copy of the A1 amendment? And I know I look silly, but my glasses broke. So and I just realized now that because of this amendment and where it's fitting in, it's going to require the renumbering of sections in Article 2. And so I'll have to have my amendment redrafted. The language itself is fine, but it sneaks in new sections. And this amendment is the bill, folks, that we heard just last week as House File 3220, and it fits in well into Representative Hayden's bill because it deals with child care assistance programs, and specifically it's looking at the young people, the teenage parents up through age 20 parents who are still in school or a school equivalent to get that diploma or GED, and right now there's a requirement to apply every 6 months. Doesn't fit in well with the school calendar, and for anyone who's ever had a teenager remembers it. There's a little less follow-through with that reapplication with paperwork. And one of the results, because there's some federal funding that comes into the schools, is I think Minneapolis Public School alone lost $130,000 that they could have had in federal funding to help keep these kids in school. And I know that as a standalone bill, it passed here last week with no opposition. And so I'm hoping that when this comes up for a vote, that not only will I have my amendment with the renumbering of the sections, but that it'll also go smoothly and I can have everybody's support.
Thank you. And Representative Hayden, a friendly...
I think that is fantastic. She had the right words. Minneapolis would gain more money with it. You said all politics are local, Madam Chair, so that was music to my ears. No, that would be fantastic, and hopefully we can just merge them together, and I'll work with Representative Kulik-Jackson as we get this out and get to the floor if there are questions at that time.
That would be great. To the department, any concerns about the amendment?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would not be the right person at the department to speak to that.
Well, if they have concerns, make sure they let us know right away so that we would like to move this bill forward. I think everything's okay, right?
To clarify, for your sake, Representative Hayden, it does not delete or change anything. It just sort of fits mine smoothly right inside. Right.
Got it. Okay,
good. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Okay. Thank you. Members, again, we will move the bill officially first thing on Thursday with the amendment in it. Okay. Next, we have Representative Abler. And if his testifiers want to come down, too. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, we have real testifiers for the imaginary bill, so.
Okay. Yeah, this paperwork issue is not good. So we will also do the same process with your bill.
Yeah, that's great. Thank
you. It's just not here. And so on Thursday, we'll officially pass it out. And
it goes to the floor.
Get moving.
Yeah. And then it goes to the floor after that, so.
Yeah. And I think you have carried this the last couple of years, Representative Abler.
Nice to be back again, and always nice to see your committee. And
good. Well, tell us about your bill.
Well, just to save time, I'll let my testifiers tell you about the bill.
Okay, we'll do that. Welcome to the committee. If you'd like to state your name for the record and tell us about the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Laura Plummer-Zarust with the Department of Human Services Licensing Division. And before I begin, it's my understanding this committee would like us to address specifically Sections 9 and 11. Is that correct?
Yes.
I'm happy to address the entire bill, but should I focus on those two?
Yes.
Okay.
The whole bill, they want everything.
Okay. All right. Section 9 is regarding the current, amends the current law regarding family child care training on the reduction of risk of SIDS and shaken baby syndrome, SIDS being sudden infant death syndrome. And with regard to the shaken baby syndrome training, the current law requires that before staff persons, caregivers, and helpers assist in the care of infants and children under school age, they must receive training on reducing the risk of shaken baby syndrome training. And the shaken baby syndrome training video section is the piece that is being amended in this Section 9 of the law. And under the current law, the training video must be viewed annually and is counted as part of the initial ongoing training. And so what this amendment does is merely makes the shaken baby video training requirement under the paragraph E consistent with the overall training requirement related to shaken baby syndrome training under paragraph A. It just clarifies that viewing the video presentation on the dangers associated with shaking infants and young children is required annually for all staff, caregivers, and helpers in family child care, not just the provider. So it's clarifying that the provider means that it includes all those who will care for infants or young children.
What's the definition of helper?
Okay. definition of helper is in the rule, yeah. Which I don't have handy, so I can't quote it, but it's basically... Very good. One who helps. So they're basically under the direction of the license holder. They can't provide care themselves. They are just a helper, and often they're young people that are there helping just, you know, a little bit during the day. But they aren't responsible for the care. The license holder is still responsible for the care.
Okay. Mr. Kerber?
Madam Chair and members, my name is Jerry Kerber. I'm the director of the licensing division. And the helper concept is one that's kind of plays out throughout the family child care licensing rule. And as you will recall, that you can be a license holder and serve up to 10 kids or 12 in some conditions. But if you have a helper or a second adult, you can serve up to 14 children. And so the duties of the helper get identified, the training requirements and then the background study requirements and things like that for the helper.
Okay.
And the helper can be a teenager, but it doesn't have to be an adult, but that kind of gets played out. And that's the language we're using here.
Is the helper registered or identified somewhere, right?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the helper would be identified by the license holder in terms of that helper's role in complying with the ratios and all of that, but would also have to have, in this case, that training, and they would have to have the background study, that type of thing.
Okay. Thank you.
And then I'll go on to Section 11. And Section 11 is regarding the definition of serious maltreatment under the Human Services Background Studies Law. So the broader term maltreatment under the maltreatment reporting laws includes both abuse and neglect. Individuals are disqualified under a background studies law if the maltreatment that they're found responsible for is serious or recurring. And serious maltreatment is defined under this subdivision really as three primary things: sexual abuse, abuse resulting in serious injury, or maltreatment resulting in serious injury, which reasonably requires the care of a physician, whether or not that care is sought. And that is the provision that's being amended. What we're doing is clarifying that by replacing the more general term maltreatment with neglect, because that is what this is already intended to refer to be more accurate about that we're focusing on neglect. Then this provision also clarifies the term care of a physician as it pertains to making a determination of whether that maltreatment is serious for purposes of a disqualification. And so when an individual has been found responsible for neglect, the child sustains an injury which reasonably requires the care of a physician, whether or not the care is sought, then the individual is disqualified based on serious maltreatment. And the amendment goes on to clarify what is not considered to be care of a physician, so it gives a little bit more definition of that in terms of some remedies that are available over the counter, prescriptions for topical antibiotics to treat burns for which there would be no follow-up medical appointment. So in these situations, if that was the case, the individual would not then be disqualified. Are there any questions regarding either of those sections?
Members, any questions? Okay. We will have, when we have the paperwork on Thursday, we will have an amendment to this, which will be Representative Greiling's bill, which we heard earlier in the hearing. So, Representative Greiling, you want to remind us how your bill fits into this bill and so we can all move forward together?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm hoping Representative Abler will look kindly on my bill, and the topic is licensing, and people can't be licensed if they have a real accident, but unintended, and the parents are okay with it being an accident, then with the language that I have, they would be able to keep their license and so forth. So I think it fits very nicely in this bill.
Representative Abel?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Greiling's point is well taken. It's germane. Anyway, so I'm happy to help. This is the kind of bill that seems to attract these kinds of topics, and I don't know what this feature of this bill is. It might just be the size here, but in the past it's gotten pretty sizable, and there was one year this was the only bill that moved, and it had like 30 elements, all of which were non-controversial. It was a very happy conference committee in a year when everything else was being sunk at sea. So. Glad to take your piece, so thank you.
Mr. Kerber.
Madam Chair, I might just add that Representative Greiling's bill fits really nice with this, because what it does is there's sort of three things going on at once here, and we spent a lot of time working with the stakeholders with this. What we're talking about here is what kind of things are going to result in somebody's disqualification. Representative Greiling's bill moves upstream just a little bit and talks about what kinds of things have to even be called maltreatment, putting a little more discretion in there for the commissioner to recognize that some other kinds of events don't have to be labeled that way. But then one of the really exciting parts about that, about Representative Browning's bill, is the risk reduction measures, and that child care providers will do an assessment of their environment and the kids that they serve and identify any of those characteristics that present an unusual risk to kids, and then come up with some methods to prevent injury from occurring. And so a huge part of her bill is preventative, and so hopefully we can stop talking so much about maltreatment and disqualifications and all this stuff. That's what our hope is, and so it's a very exciting component there.
So, Mr. Kerber, I take it the department is supporting this.
We are.
Okay, just double checking, because I yeah. I'm not sure we were sure about that.
We
so.
Were not sure about that.
But you have the authority. Yes. So now we are sure. Okay. Good
news.
Well, good. We will, again, have this all happen. Yeah. You don't have to come back, so it will happen at the beginning of the meeting on Thursday. Representative Abler?
No, thank you very much.
Sure. Any closing comments?
Well, just some of this licensure business, some of it's onerous, and I'm sure each person in the room, as well as this author and the staff next to me, is concerned about the safety of the children. And all those matters. And sometimes, though, it's important to recognize, you know, who can still work and who can't. And unrelated parts to this, but it points to the pendulum swings, and we locked up all the sex offenders. That was at 2003 or something. And a lot of people couldn't work after that were actually fine. And so I think that, not the sex offenders, but there was a big race to all that. And we people that were had a set aside of the disqualification. We were happily working as a gardener or something, and had no infractions. And And so this kind of thing comes along. And so this is the kind of bill that, like a Representative Greiling's piece, to decide what is bad, what is really not ever going to happen again, and who's safe to work. And it's the department's job. In fact, even just to give a plug to the department, at the time, when they were the set-asides were disallowed, they had set aside 14,000 disqualifications. People who were disqualified because they had done something somewhere. And they reviewed probably 100,000 cases and decided 14,000 could work. Of those 14,000, only 5 people did something. And 3 of them did something unrelated to what they were set aside for. And I think, in fact, 1 person out of 14,000 was actually determined to have been inappropriately, that's pretty good odds. Now, 14,000 employees, you're not going to get only 1 person who's undesirable. So the department, for all their challenges, I've been more and more impressed with how they attempt to do their work. And so those are just my comments for the committee. So.
Okay, thank you. And with that, we will hear the bill or officially move the bill on Thursday. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next, we were worried, Representative Rosenthal, I almost had to have Representative Greiling step in for you, but I guess you can come chair the committee now, and I have a bill up. I didn't get to tell you that, Representative Greiling, but we were going to maybe have you come up, or Representative Mariani, or maybe Representative Ward, but now I think we're set.
The whole host of great chairs.
Yes.
Had the policy. I am supposed to present it, but also had to go back.
I move that House File 3407 be labeled as possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill. Representative Slawik, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is the Department of Ed policy bill, so they have come to us, members, with some policy changes that we are hoping to implement. I do have a few amendments, Mr. Chair.
Would you like to move your amendment?
Yes. First is the A10-2262.
Does anyone have the amendment? Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
The next, I have 2 oral amendments, Mr. Chair. We've been working with the department on these. Okay. So on page 3... 3.26, after the word as, insert
quality assurance, and improvement.
Quality assurance and improvement. So it would read standards as well as quality assurance and improvement family supports.
There's a comma after
improvement. Improvement, comma, family supports. Okay, so they're 2 separate topics, yes.
Does everyone on the committee understand the amendment, where it is? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Okay. 1 more, Mr. Chair. Okay. Okay, on line 4.26, page 4, number 2. Has completed health and developmental screening, and then insert within 90 days of program enrollment under section 121A.16. Mr. Chair, I'm thinking if the staff has any questions, but I think they're getting these. We should get these just fine. Okay.
Everyone have that amendment? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Slowick.
Thank you. I'd now like to have the department talk about the bill.
Thank you, Representative Slowick and Chair. My name is Lisa Barnage. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Education. And I'm going to quickly talk about sections 1-3 of the bill. The intent of these sections are to ensure that if a charter school chooses to provide early childhood screening, that they do follow the same standards and procedures that a regular school district has to follow. So in section 1, it just allows a charter school to elect if they choose to provide the screening. And then in section 2, it requires the charter school to inform parents that apply to the school that they offer the screening, which is what school districts currently do. And then in section 3 is where we actually ensure that they follow the same standards and procedures as a school district when actually implementing this early childhood screening program for the children.
If there are no questions, I'm going to take over at section 4. I'm Karen Carlson with the department.
Welcome to the committee.
Section 4 is a definition of the early learning and care system, which was in the bill last year, but something happened to it in the dark of night, and so we're
You sure it was a dark night?
we're it's resurfacing now, but a much better definition. Both DHS and MDE worked together to develop this definition, really to put some clarity and consistency to the components of the early childhood system and to make it clear that the system components have a base in research. Section 5, we're proposing some clarification to the eligibility of children who attend school readiness programs. And so section 5, you'll see on line 4.12, there's a striking of language in arranging for screening. Actually, we're picking that up in the new language down below in section 6. So it's not gone, it's just recast here. I'm going to do the section 6 in the bill first and then go to the amendment second because it makes more sense that way. In section 6, you'll recall that school readiness was established in 1991. I tell you every year, I remind you of that. And it was in response to trying to serve kids who are low income but who are not enough low income to qualify for Head Start. And it's never been very clear other than the age of the child who's eligible for the program. Part of the funding comes from four-year-old census in the district, and 50% of it comes from the free and reduced lunch count in the district. And so we're clarifying that a child's eligible to participate in the school readiness program if the child is at least 3 years old, has completed health and development screening within 90 days of enrollment, and then has one or more of the following risk factors, which are generally accepted risk factors of free and reduced lunch, ELL, homelessness, IEP, or IIIP, identified through screening. And then you'll see on page 5, we also include is defined at risk by the school district so that each district can be responsive to local conditions or particular family circumstances that wouldn't be covered in the list above. And then if you go to the amendment is we're amending some language in the program fees section. We're not changing that each district has to continue to have a sliding fee schedule, and it must still waive fees for participants unable to pay. But we are adding that at discretion of the district, they can take non-eligible children into this program, but then they have to charge fees and they can't waive the fees for the non-eligible children. So this is to target the school readiness aid that I explained comes partly from free and reduced lunch count to the eligible children. And then section 7 is just a cleanup piece. Somebody said it looked like a windfall for school readiness, but sad to say it's not. That use of general revenue in community education can be used, as it has been since 1991, for school readiness programs.
Thank you, Ms. Bainbridge. Questions from members? Representative Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure who this is a question for, but Section 4, the Early Learning and Care System, is this connected to the challenge grants or this build-out of the big statewide kind of oversight system for all of these early care programs? But how does this fit into the agency's plan for the future, I guess, maybe is the broader question.
Ms. Bainbridge.
Mr. Chair and Representative Downey, actually, as I explained, it was in last year's bill when we didn't even know about challenge grants and we didn't even know about right. the president. But it certainly would serve the purpose of providing some consistency when we do apply for that money. We just came, actually, from the Early Childhood Council meeting this afternoon where there were motions bandied about establishing coalitions to get ready for that money, and certainly this would be a good guidance piece, I think, for groups to have when they're looking to input into the into that application process.
Representative Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This goes back to some questions and concerns I had in previous hearings. Could this not be construed, or is it maybe not? Maybe it is just the specific intent of this early learning and care system within the state to, it says, contribute to all aspects of children's development and prepare all children for kindergarten. Are there limitations or exceptions to this, or does the state now own all of these functions across all of these domains for all kids? Anyway, it seems really large and all-encompassing. So if you could help me understand maybe whether there's some constraints to this or not, or whether the state really does own all of that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Downey, it really is to declare these components as part of any development of any system so that so that components aren't left out or defined otherwise. The department's intent is not so much to talk about all children have to do a certain thing before school.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, it says, and prepare all children for kindergarten, and it describes a coherent structure of curriculum, instructional practice, assessments, programmatic standards, family supports, professional development, engagement, outreach, accountability, financing, and governance. I'm not sure what else there is. If I'm over-interpreting this, I'd welcome correction, but it seems really big and really all-encompassing to me.
Representative Slowick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Downey, you know, I have to admit I was partially racking my brain on why we had this language in there because it was a year ago. And you start to think, well, what were we doing a year ago that was important? And I think part of it, and maybe this is what I remember, and I'll put this, I want to give you a little bit of context. So today was the Governor's Council on Early Childhood. So I went there and I talked about what the Early Childhood Caucus agenda is. I also talked about a bill, two bills you're going to see on Thursday, about adding two duties to the Governor's Council. We want to add two duties because in statute it is that all kids will be ready by 2020. So we've been struggling with, you know, how do you get all kids ready for school by 2020. And when they did that in the environment and they did renewables, it's however percent renewable by 2020, then they set these benchmarks. Well, in our area, it's been very difficult to set benchmarks because we aren't sure what to benchmark, you know, whether it's QRS programs or the school assessments or kind of how you do it. And so one part of it was to talk about the whole system, and this is my recollection, and kind of how you start, if you're going to get all kids ready, the basis of what you're doing and what the system is. Part of it, I remember, is the discussion of Representative Peterson's office bill, because this feels a little bit like that. But I think that what I recall was sort of driving at it's how do you get all kids ready? Well, you have a system in place. It seems well defined, but it's actually pretty general. The two bills you're going to see on Thursday fit into this a little bit, in that you're going to see a report card. So how do you know how many kids in the state are ready? Again, you know, and asking the council to pick up what would the reporting measures be, as well as benchmarks on how to do that. It may take a year or two or more till that a subcommittee would work on that type of thing. And the second bill has to do, that you will see, we're asking the council to look at, is to do with assessments. So there is a little bit of, even in me, that looks at this and thinks, what's that all about? You know, that seems awfully big. But I remember it was kind of in preparation for, we've got a big task. I mean, if we're going to get all kids school ready, you know, back in the days before you were here, Representative Downey, some of us didn't like that word, that all kids are going to be school ready, including me, because I don't think all kids can be school ready, because, you know, personally, I have a child that was special ed by the time he was three. You know, so he's not going to meet the same standards as other kids. So is it really realistic to say all kids school ready? But, you know, we had the governor always to deal with, and the governor's office wanted that it be all kids. So it's kind of forcing us into what might be just a little bit unrealistic. We don't like to set goals we can't meet, but when we use words in legislation like all or never or any of that, it makes it a little harder to do. So it's a long explanation of saying, I think this was part of the language of getting ready. And I don't remember if it was lost in the dark of night. That's sort of a saying we use more unhappy as much as the morass. And, you know, it's going to be kind of like that this year again. So we hope we can get...
when other things went.
Yes. And if all things go this year... this could go, baby. We hope it makes it through. It is sort of precedent setting. Yes, well worth taking a look at, but you know, we see if we're going to get kids all ready, we're going to need a system to start to do that. And right now, the system isn't really a system. It's all these different components all over the place. When do we say we've arrived? I don't know. You know, 2020 maybe, or if the governor's council. I mean, I have to say, members, if you had gone to the governor's council today, I mean, I am very impressed with the work that's being done. I mean, it's the work maybe we all want to do, but we never have time to do, and we don't have all those committees we can sit on, and they are doing really great work. So I have hope that we could potentially get farther along, and this is starting to piece together. You know, what would it take? So that's my long explanation of what this language is. Again, it's in the department's bill. It will be put through, but the outcome of the session, the outcomes of the session are long to be awaited. That makes sense.
Mr. Chair, I just have one thing to add. Yeah. You did give direction to the Early Childhood Council last year to develop a system that gets all kids ready for school by 2020. So that is in Chapter 124D. So
yes,
this is part positions of it.
Right. Yeah. I think that's what it really was, was positioning it to get all kids ready. And we will, I don't know if we're having a presentation on the Governor's Council. Not really. Maybe we should talk about having their work discussed in this committee, because if you see the underpinnings of what they're working on is huge sort of systematic work and trying to make recommendations around that and where to go.
Representative Downey. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So maybe just one final follow-up. So in line 3.31, the way I read this then, so private child care would also be kind of part of or subject to the governance, financing, accountability, et cetera, of the system. And so maybe another question, a more pinpointed question, would any child care provider be able to exist outside the system? And would I, as a parent, be able to keep my kids outside the system? Or does all kids and all of these child care centers automatically, by definition here, kind of get rolled under the system?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, I think when you look at this and you talk about a system, you know, we were even talking about this at the early childhood caucus meeting over lunchtime with the pizza and the pop. It was that child care really, as you know, is, and the early childhood system is a private system. McKinsey did that study what, a couple years ago, and they looked at the where does the vast money of spending, if you just took child care, go, comes right out of parents' pockets. It's not coming out of here. You look at Representative Greiling, you look at more of the K-12 system, you're going to see the most of the money, obviously, comes from the government. So, one, it needs to be in there because that's where most of the money is. But no, as a parent, let's see, if you were in, this has public and private child care, so I was trying to think of family, friend, and neighbor, and all of that, where that actually even falls, if it there, or if your kids were with grandma or with you, is that in
probably falls there? Outside here.
Yeah, it does fall outside here. So there are some things, you know, that one of the issues, Representative Downey, is a whole family, friend, and neighbor area. As much as we might think we're starting to build a system and starting to regulate child care and preschool and school readiness and Head Start, and what happens is there's a bunch of kids that are just totally off the radar screen. You know, they're in family, friend, and neighbor care, so they're not necessarily even in licensed care. I don't know how, do you know what the numbers are on that? But it's pretty big. It's very high. Yeah, many thousand. And also the proportion, if you look at center care versus kids in home care in Minnesota, isn't it 85-15? Is that correct? 85% are in home care, and so 15. So centers are actually a really small piece too. I mean, if people want to think, a lot of kids are in centers. It's 15%. So most kids are out at homes, and then there's a whole bunch that are out at homes. We don't know. We're not tracking at all. So I think there is a lot of kids that fall outside of here. I think there still is a debate: is if we're going to get all kids again ready for school by 2020. State has no interaction with those kids or their families, right, at all, potentially, until they come to school. And I, you know, we probably differ on the how we see that, but to me, I'd like to see us doing some kind of supports to those families and to those kids, and talking about, you know, quality and things like that, but right now, the state is not involved at all. Glad we have extra time. Mm-hmm. We could talk for 25 more minutes about if we want to, because the next couple of committees are going to be really booked members. So it's we're going to be one of our few moments.
Any closing comments, Representative Slawick?
Well, members, I hope you will support the bill. The department always comes to us with. You know, sort of a combination of technical and some thoughtful changes, I think, which is the, as you see in Section 4, I remember wrestling with that last year, and it did take it some time to get it to take that shape. I think that the school readiness eligibility requirements are very important, and we appreciate those. You bring those back to us. I think there's always a little bit of wrestling with the department, but we, for the most part, we do have great respect for the work you do and for bringing us bills like this.
And we keep showing up to wrestle. So.
Yes, you do. And so do we. We hope.
I renew my motion that House File 3407, as amended several times, will be laid over for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill. And the committee is now adjourned.